And I think we have Tony Leah. We didn't get the music, but we're going to get Tony Leah. That's okay. But we have Tony will be very pleased to know we got a great song. Are you there, Tony?
I'm here.
We're going to, hey, Tony, we found the Alabama, Blind Boys of Alabama singing If I Had a Hammer. That seems appropriate, doesn't it?
Wow, that's fantastic.
You and I talked about what's appropriate music, and I thought of that. And it turns out the only people who really do it right is the Blind Boys of Alabama, which is, anyway, a cultural note. We'll play it after we've spoken to you. You've got a big subject in front of you. The United Auto Workers have got the attention of everybody in North America because they have they've gone out against the big three. But it's when we say that they have done that, it's 1,200 workers at three plants. So start filling us in. What is this tactic and what are the main issues?
Yes, the UAW is calling it a stand-up strike, which means that it's going to progressively escalate if the companies don't meet the union's demands. And they started with three plants, one each, from Ford, General Motors, and Stellantis. So they are taking action against all three companies that they're bargaining with. And I think it's about 13,000 or 14,000 workers between those three plants. And they've said that if that doesn't get the attention of the companies and start them getting serious about meeting the union's demands, then they're going to start calling on more plants and more workers to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
It has attracted tremendous attention from workers and unions across the United States, across Canada, and internationally, mm-hmm. because it's a very bold and aggressive stance that they're taking. They said when they were able to elect new leadership last year and displace the administration caucus that had been comfortably in power since Walter Reuther, they said they wanted to do that so they could make that union a real weapon on behalf of the members and take on the corporations, and they're showing that they're doing that.
Mm-hmm. By the way, I mean, we had an expression here, used to do it in postal workers and some public sector people, they had what they called rotating strikes.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a similar phenomenon?
Well, I guess it has some similarity. The difference is that the strike won't rotate. The workers who are on strike now will continue to stay on strike, but more workers will go on strike. So it's more of an escalating strategy.
So, all right. So let's say 2 or 3 days from now, and the talks are going nowhere, then it would be another group joining the ones who are already out.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, let's today's Globe and Mail Business. They reprinted a story from Reuters, and they say that the union is asking for 40% wage increase over the life of the contract. And second item is restoring a cost of living allowance. We've spoken of this on the show. You want to talk about those things? I saw today, I think the business section said they're offering something short of 20% on the other side, one of the companies. Maybe it was Stellantis.
Yeah, Stellantis is offering 19.5%, but Ford and GM's offers are quite similar. The UAW has, I think you could call it an audacious set of demands, the 10 major demands. And they haven't walked back any of them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, wages is a huge issue because most workers have been losing ground to inflation, and that's certainly true in the auto industry. And the response of the union is to demand double-digit wage increases for every year of a 4-year contract, so at least 40% in 4 years. They haven't moved from that figure yet.
Mm-hmm.
They're demanding the restoration of cost of living formula, which is that's one of the earliest achievements of the UAW back in the 1940s, and protected workers from inflation, so they didn't have to bargain wages to take account of inflation every year because they had the COLA formula. And that's been lost for about 16 years. So they're demanding that that be restored.
And yes.
Those are really huge issues that would make big differences for auto workers, but for a lot of workers across Canada and the United States, those are things that workers need.
Yeah. By the way, this is, like, we spoke to you previous about this matter that, well, everybody used to know the term COLA, but it just disappeared from our vocabulary. And, of course, it didn't just disappear. Somebody took it. And yeah. They did it in hard times, right, where they said, look, boy, you know, the big guys are getting a little woozy. It looks like, they might have to fold up. And so they had this old, you remember the old expression, they want the workers to tighten their belts. And the workers did it. The unions went along, and the COLA went out the door.
Yeah. That's right.
Now, as far as I know, the big three are not actually woozy, or unless it's from being drunk on all the money they're making.
One of the things I love about Sean Fain and the new UAW leadership is they are very forthright about talking about not just the income of the executives of the auto companies, but the profits that those companies are making. And Sean Fain pointed out that the three companies they're bargaining with in the last 10 years made $250 billion in profit. And their profits just in the first 6 months of this year, the three companies, was $21 billion. So for them to pretend that somehow they can't afford to restore to workers what they took away during the last economic recession, is ludicrous.
Yeah. By the way, none of the brass are taking any cuts, right? They seem to be, their increases have been pretty dramatic.
The figure of 40% that the union is demanding matches the increase that the executives have had in the last 4 years.
Ah. What's good for the goose is good for United Auto Workers.
Yep.
Now, also, they want defined benefit pensions. How important is that to you? By the way, I remember Tony Leah is with Unifor. This is a second line of conversation, but they also have a contract that's coming due tonight at midnight, right?
This break deadline at Ford only in Canada
at
is
Ford.
Midnight tonight. The issue of pensions, of course, again, this goes back to the foundation of the industrial union movement, when workers said that they deserved a decent income and they deserved a secure retirement. And that was unheard of in the 1930s. Pensions were something that only applied to executives and not workers. Workers didn't get pensions. They're supposed to work until they drop.
Yes.
But unions.
There was a thing called the scrap heap.
The scrap heap. Unions took that on and negotiated, forced companies to pay pensions. And a defined benefit pension is the only one that really provides a secure retirement for workers, because it's based on, you can count on the monthly income that's negotiated, and the corporations are responsible for paying that. But in the last 15 years, both in the United States and Canada, that's been removed from the contracts with the auto companies. And anybody that's been hired in the last 15 years doesn't have a defined benefit pension. They get contributions to an RSP, basically, which is insecure. Depends on investment results, and it's also contributory. The workers have to pay into it from their own pay, which is not the case with the defined benefit pension that workers who started before that time have. The other thing that happened in the last 15 years is that increases to the pensions stopped. There's been zero increase in pensions for Canadian auto workers since 2007. So anybody that retired in 2007 or before is getting the same dollar figure, but with inflation, they've lost 41% of the value of their pension over that period of time.
Yeah. By the way, this goes a long way toward explaining why the polls are showing that Canadians and Americans, but in this case the American population, is supportive of unions, but particularly supportive right at this moment of the United Auto Workers, because inflation is eating them up.
Yes, and combined with the fact that the UAW has been successful in explaining to people how many auto workers are getting really low wages because of the two-tier system, the long period of time it takes workers to get to the top rate, and the low wages they start at, which is, in many cases, $16 or $17 an hour, the UAW. So
that's, as you say, that's a McDonald's job.
Yes, or worse. And when people understand that, start to understand that, that also creates a lot of sympathy for what the UAW is taking on in this strike.
Yeah, there's no question this is causing a stir. Everybody's talking about how the working class across America and Canada is beginning to change. But in the case of UAW, just as you have spoken to us in the past about the Teamsters, there's new style leadership. And they seem to be, let's put it this way, a little more selfless than we have been used to with the brass of major unions. And I don't know whether the companies seem to be getting, starting to realize this is serious. And what you describe, and we've gone into this in the past, we want to keep hammering this point, is that, like, for example, what I just read out to you, we know all about what the UAW wants. But if we were to talk about Unifor, we don't actually know what they want, right?
It's a very stark contrast. The UAW, from the very beginning, weeks ago, made all of their demands crystal clear. And that raises the expectation of their members as well. When they say, we're going to get rid of tiers and we're going to get temps to be recognized as full, equal workers after 90 days, people understand that. They know what the demand is, and that's what they want. So they're going to, you know, they'll be able to easily judge whether that objective has been met or not. In Canada, the leadership of Unifor has been as vague as you could possibly be. They've said, we want wage increases. Well, how much do you want? We're not saying. We want pension increases. We want to shorten the wage progression. How much do you want to shorten it? Well, they don't say. The wage progression is the part of the contract that says somebody who's hired today at $13 an hour less than other auto workers doesn't get to equal pay for 8 years.
8 years. So they'd like to shorten that. Not get rid of it.
They'd like to shorten it, not get rid of it. And Unifor members are waking up and paying attention. And one of the things that I've been able to do is just collect some of the comments that people are making online about what they're hearing, what they're seeing from the UAW and what they're hearing from their own leadership in Unifor. So one member wrote, people didn't ask for reduced tiers. They demanded to eliminate them. You know, yes, that's what we need, you know, not, mm-hmm. not reduce it from 8 years to 6 years or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they are noticing that the UAW members are getting a lot more information from Sean Thain's updates than they're getting from Unifor so far. One member posted, Unifor updates suck. They can mm-hmm. learn a lot by the way the UAW gives updates.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody else commented on that. Totally agree. And a third person said, that point was made at today's union meeting.
Mm-hmm.
So that's at a Unifor auto workers local union meeting. They're talking about this.
News travels fast, doesn't it?
Well, it's starting to. In this day and age, it's not hard to know what's going on, and people have an avenue to share their opinions, more quickly and more visibly. So it is interesting, and it's remains to be seen. I'm not going to prejudge what's going to happen with the bargaining on either side of the border. But I think that you do strengthen your membership more if you give them more information, and that's going to be important to the outcome of the battles.
When I hear that, it sounds, it's almost like they believe that secrecy is a strategy, but the company knows what you're asking, but your members don't know.
Yeah, and Unifor.
So why keep a secret from your own members?
Well, that's right. What do you gain from that? And they're also not sharing.
There's a good question, but we had to look into that.
Yes.
What's the gain from doing that?
They're also not sharing what the company's response is. And the UAW is doing both. They're saying, here's our demands. Here's what Ford has offered. Here's what GM has offered. Here's another comment from a Unifor member. And this was posted right after Unifor had a streaming information meeting where they, were updating members by not giving them very much information. And this member said, "I don't think the members appreciate you telling us what we should think. We're all grown up out here. Give us the facts so we can have a sense of direction."
Yes.
This overprotective band of teleprompter readers really need to pull a page out of the Fain playbook.
My. Yes, by the way, when that assertion is made, I hope it's in the back of the mind of the one who wrote it, is that they may not agree with him. There is really across the board a culture that has developed. And it was in the U.S. too, actually, it's quite established that they knew best, and the members were sort of to be managed, and you learn a kind of a baffle gab to have them scratching their heads, wondering all the time. And the idea of actually going in front of them and telling them everything you're doing, and by the way, and of course, this is aided by the internet age we're in, where you can know instantly what the leader thinks. This Sean Fain makes himself available practically on a daily basis to his members. He sounds like, reminds me of the president of Mexico. Every morning at 7 o'clock, he has a press conference.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good way to stay popular.
Well, that's right. But then you got to deliver. And, I went through a lot of years hearing people from the auto bargaining committees in Unifor talking about how important it was to reduce the expectation of the members.
Mm-hmm. Reduce it.
Reduce it, yeah.
Make them realistic.
Yes.
I did see once it was on CBS or some news that they were having problems with a local in Michigan, and they sent a representative from the national. This is the bad old days when they were led by guys who are now in prison. Anyhow, this representative was in front of a meeting, a large, angry meeting, and he was tapping his foot and looking at them. And when the noise died down, he said, "Say what you want. I'm the only one in the building with a vote." That wasn't a high moment for the UAW.
I think that person was lucky to be able to get out of that meeting alive after that. Wow. But when they don't say it so baldly, that is the way that they thought. And you're right, that leadership has been displaced.
Yes.
And that's part of the reason why.
Of course, you have a semi-new leadership, which... It's really interesting, by the way, the parallels. There was an issue of, let's call it, inappropriate conduct. In the case of the U.S., it was, of a major felony, I guess is the word, and they put him in handcuffs. But there was a problem here, too. And people thought, okay, now we're going to clean house, and we're going to have a transparent process, which in the U.S., that produced Sean Fain.
Yes, and, but you bumped into
turbulence here on that on the yes. clarification of what the issues were.
But yes, because before we got Sean Fain, we got one member, one vote in the UAW as a solution to the corruption crisis, and that's what allowed for Sean Fain and people who ran with him on a platform of restoring the union to the members and taking on concessions and getting rid of the idea of collaboration and partnership with the companies to be successful. Whereas in Canada, we didn't have that. Mm-hmm. We did have a leader, and the current leadership doesn't like to mention the name of Jerry Dias, but that's his name. And he was caught in what I would consider to be corrupt practices. But it didn't lead to a change in the way that elections are held within Unifor. They've maintained the system of having convention delegates vote for the leader.
Which is much easier for a leadership to manage.
But it also meant that most of the existing leadership structure stayed in place. So mm-hmm. some leaders were, different leaders were elected, but the basic structure was not upended the way it was in the United States.
Yeah.
And so there's that built-in inertia of this is the way we do things. This way.
And there's a parallel with the Teamsters, too, where they got one member, one vote.
That's right.
And it's interesting, by the way, when you have a problem of democracy, they found out that the answer is more democracy.
Yes.
Not the American electoral college method or having a Senate for life or whatever.
Yeah,
more democracy.
Yeah, that's true.
We're speaking to Tony Leo, who is from the legendary local in General Motors in Oshawa. So there's this kind of a DNA that you have, Tony. You're very fortunate. I noticed that the one item that the UAW is going for, I don't know about Unifor, but in the UAW, they're saying they want a 32-hour week or a shorter week. And the American media is tearing its hair out as though that is the wildest, craziest idea they heard of. But by the way, isn't it true that in Germany and some places in Europe, they have the shorter work week?
Definitely, yes. They have 35-hour work weeks or less or in around that. And that's been a major objective of labor movements, unions that really are trying to improve things for their members and for their class, and it's part, again, of the original history of the UAW, which demanded a 30-hour work week for 40 hours pay in 1937, when they first went on strike against General Motors.
This is 2023.
And you're right, we got to revive some of those traditions because they were important and they achieved things, they were successful, and workers benefited. And they showed that workers did have power to achieve things. But you're right. A lot of the business commentators are tearing their hair out at the idea that workers would have the effrontery to say that they should work fewer hours for the same pay. But why not? They're the ones that are producing the profits, and that would provide more jobs, and it would make their lives...
Yes.
Bearable, instead of working, slugging their guts out in an auto plant, which is dangerous work that destroys your body bit by bit. And I don't know if many people know this, but again, it's one of the things that the UAW leadership has really highlighted during these negotiations and the strike, is that in some of the plants, the current collective agreement allows management to declare emergency needs and force people to work 7 days a week, 12 hours a day for up to 2 or 3 months in a row.
That they can do that right now.
They can do that now. in some of the plants. That's in their contract. The workers can be forced to do that.
It's a small print, bold caps. You will do 12 hours a day. That definitely will kill somebody.
Of course.
It's because even the sleep deprivation issue, I remember they talked about this in Sudbury, the miners, some of those guys working bonus and all that, there were accidents on the highway, and they were saying those guys were asleep.
Yeah. And you know, the Sean Fain is that their demand is about a better work-life balance, and mm-hmm. the way to do that is to shorten the hours that you have to be working on the assembly line for the same pay, because of course you need the pay to be able to have a decent life. And it's about workers deserving a decent life. And sure, there's people out there, commentators and business people, who don't think workers should have a decent life. But unions ought to believe that and fight for it.
Yeah, well, when unions first got established in the 30s in the auto industry, for example, the publicity at the time from the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, you know, they all said, if they get unions, grass will grow in the streets.
Yeah.
And it didn't grow in the streets, oddly enough. Everything kind of, life improved. But the projection was dire. Like, if they give them shorter hours, everything will collapse. But of course, elsewhere, again, in Germany and elsewhere, they already do have shorter work week. I have to remind people, we don't have the only workforce in the world making advanced products.
Phil, can I just add a point about that? Not only do they have shorter hours, but the standard in most of what they call the industrialized world for paid leave, vacations, is much, much higher. Americans have no guarantee of any kind of vacation, and in Canada we have very minimal guarantees of 2 weeks a year. Germans get 6 weeks a year.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. It's
one of the most.
You have to learn to say that in German.
Yeah.
One of the most brilliant things that I ever saw was a little clip that Michael Moore did. He set up in the middle of Times Square. And it was fall or something, it was cold, but he set up some heat lamps and umbrellas, and he had people bouncing a beach ball around in wearing beach clothing, and they were German visitors. and then he was grabbing Americans walking by, looking at this spectacle, and saying, how much vacation do you get a year? You know, and people were saying, 1 week, 2 weeks. And he was saying, look at these visitors from Germany, they get 6 weeks vacation a year. What do you think of that?
I'm sure they ran away in terror that they'd be seen associating. A very important, you might say a legendary labor leader from Canada, went down on practically the first day and has joined the picket line, Sid Ryan.
Yes.
And he's reporting on it. That's a significant development. He's trying to call Canadian labor's attention to something important.
It is, yeah. I was very pleased to see Sid was down in Warren, Michigan, on the picket lines of one of the plants that's on strike, talking about how important it was. He talked about the issues, you know, of fighting to get back COLA and other things that have been taken away from auto workers over the years. And he said it's sending a signal to all unions across Canada and across the U.S. The only way to make gains is to come out on strike, use the power of your membership. And he said that it's, you know, going back to the roots of the union, and that he played some clips from Sean Fain saying that it's actually a class warfare. And
you know, that is so... Go on, I'm sorry, please, go.
Well, that's pretty much... There was one more part of the clip that he played, which that Sean Fain has been saying, and he's addressing this issue that you referred to about the fear that's created that, you know, this is going to destroy things, is going to destroy the economy. And Sean Fain said, well, that's their economy, and it only works for the billionaires. And when they say it's he says they say that it's going to wreck the economy if we get economic and social injustice. He says, well, we're not going to wreck the economy. We're going to wreck their economy. And that was part of the clip that's where
Sid Ryan put that together, and he's doing podcasts now.
Yeah, he's doing podcasts. So you can find his channel on YouTube, and you can see him walking on the picket line with workers in United States in the Detroit neighborhood, and talking about the issues of their strike and saying this is what we need to learn from.
Yeah, that's. I really hope that message is picked up. The approach Sean Fain takes, opens doors. I notice that a lot of political people are starting to get involved. I see that Bernie Sanders was there wearing a UAW jacket and solidly with the auto workers. But I think it's very important in that respect, because there's also talk of what Biden is going to do. My guess is that what Biden thinks ultimately should be done is going to be different than what Bernie thinks should be done, because Bernie agrees with the UAW that we're dealing with greedy corporations who they have their own economy, and he agrees, let's take it away from them.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and Sean Fain and the UAW leadership has been quite clear that they expect and want support from Biden and the U.S. government, because they're issues are ones of justice and fairness, but they're not. They're going to judge politicians by their actions, mm-hmm. not by the words. And they haven't endorsed Biden because they said they're going to wait to see what he does. And when he has made statements that they don't agree with, they've been quick to say, "No, we don't agree with that." Mm-hmm. And Biden does seem to be leaning in the direction of saying, we need this to end quickly. Mm-hmm. So the only way it's going to end quickly is if the corporations are willing to meet the union's demands. Otherwise, it ain't going to be quick.
Yeah. You know, the way it's been laid out, it strikes me that it might turn into a real hard-nosed fight, because the management and the big three and all the rest of the major U.S. industries and whatnot have to be very unhappy that now we have a clear labor movement that is not in their hip pocket anymore and not agreeing to make America great again, or to tighten their belts in order so that the other guy can let their belts take off their belts. You would think in the background is a major political questions about who runs the country and who needs to be put in their place, right? Because actually Sean Fain is definitely saying we're tired of being kicked around, so we're going to fight. And
yeah.
I don't know if you can, watching the Wall Street Journal or the major finance capital gang, with what they're thinking ought to be done here.
I'm not sure they have a solution at the moment, because this is not the kind of union or union leadership that they're used to dealing with. I think that they are seem to be expressing some sense of shock that their normal approach is not working. What's the matter with these workers? Look what we're offering them. Why aren't they accepting it? So they may come up with some counter strategies. I'm not sure what they're going to be. But, mm-hmm. We'll get some ideas as time goes on. We also will know, as you mentioned, that by midnight tonight, we'll know whether there's been a deal between Unifor and Ford, or whether Unifor is on strike. And again, I'd like to go back to one of the comments that a Unifor member made online. And this person said, if Unifor settles before the UAW, we're doomed to an inferior contract. Mm-hmm. And I'm not making any predictions, but of course, if there is an inferior contract agreed to between Unifor and Ford tonight while their workers are still on strike in the United States, I don't think that would be a good thing.
Well, well. Okay, well, Tony, thanks very much. Where can we go? They just go UAW or Sean Fain. Can they get these daily updates and all the information?
UAW.org is the website. UAW has a Twitter feed and a Facebook account, and they've been posting all kinds of stuff there. And on Twitter, the hashtag is hashtag Stand Up Strike UAW.
Okay.
Or Stand Up UAW. You'll find all kinds of material and videos.
And if they just say Unifor, put up Unifor, they'll get the Unifor information as well from they can find it.
Yeah.
Tony Leo, thanks very much. We're going to listen to the Blind Boys from Alabama.
Excellent.
If I had a hammer.